Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
New VanCast to start the week, and Drancer, if ever there was an episode where I feel like we should open with the national anthem, perhaps this one's it. Do you know anybody that can sing?
Well, I can sing, J-Pat. I'm a longtime singer myself. I ran my own choir in university, if people don't realize that I'm a super massive nerd yet. I'll just reaffirm
photos?
That one last time.
Is there?
There's videos online, bud.
I'll be right back as I do a little search here. You keep talking. I'm going to do a little searching.
Yeah, if you want to see me hit the high note in Semi-Charmed Kind of Life, some really deep Googling will reveal it. Look, I don't think we should open with the anthem. I think we should open instead by just reminding our listeners and beseeching those who listen to the VanCast to wear a mask indoors in public and behave in a way that will help us get through, this second wave of COVID-19, right? Like, that's what's important. And, you know, I was thinking about it the other day. Like, I was thinking about it in regards to the elevator in my apartment building, right? Like, you know, Singapore contact tracers, like the best in the world, right? They barely even follow up with close contacts if the, you know, length or duration of face-to-face contact is under 15 minutes unmasked, right? In an elevator, I'm spending 10 seconds with a guy, like in my apartment building anyway. But you still don't do it because some people, like, I don't know what other X other person in the elevator, like, I don't enter the elevator if there's someone else there because I don't know if, like, they may have a, you know, immunocompromised family member. Like, I don't know what they're dealing with. I don't enter not because I think it's a risk to me. I don't enter because it's about being polite to them. You know what I mean? Like, both things matter at this point. And just don't be a dick. Wear a mask.
Right. And, like, I think we're on the same side of this argument. And it's a hockey pod, so I want to keep it to hockey. But there were a couple of things Canuck-related in terms of the fallout. And, first and foremost,
Let's address it. Let's address it directly, though, right? Let's set the scene and explain what happened, right?
Okay, fair enough. I was on the air on Friday afternoon when the story sort of broke. The story broke that Donnelly was going to be singing at this rally, and that was the story up until we got off the air at 6 o'clock, and then I left. I drove home, had dinner, and didn't realize that really things were just getting going at that point. And I think of all the things that happened, maybe my favorite was, like, let's be honest, Francesco Aquilini's use of Twitter all these years, live tweeting games, what's he best known for? So tight, feels like a playoff game, right? Like, he's never given anybody much over Twitter. And then to just swing the mighty hammer the way that he did on Friday on Twitter. Like, that to me was my favorite part of the whole story, was that, like, out of nowhere on Twitter, the owner drops this bomb.
I think it was Francesco Aquilini's best PR moment of the last 15 years, right? Like, it was just, the phrasing was good. It was framed in a joking manner. It was smart.
Right.
It was proactive. Like, everything about it rocked. And, you know that it worked because, like, Steve Simmons in his Sunday notes is like, I have a newfound respect for Francesco Aquilini, right? In a column that also shills for Curt Schilling going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. But nonetheless, it also blasted Kyle Dubas for defending the Kevin Cash decision. Like, it was the most Simmons column ever. But anyway, the point is if you get Simmons's praise, that's good. That's good PR. It was a well-calibrated, well-timed, well-executed little note from the owner. Frankie Twitterfingers laying down the law on Twitter. Like, just fantastic.
And so I just looked again. 21,000 likes, 2,100 replies. And I joked on Friday, but there was some reality. Like, I did spend a good chunk of my Friday night. I poured a drink. And I just went through the mentions because there was, like, as any Francesco tweet, you're bound to get some gold, but you can imagine the response and the reaction to this one. And I swear to God, every third response to the initial tweet suggested that Louis Erickson was an anti-masker and was planning to attend the rally as well, and he should be fired too.
Oh my God. That's incredible. First of all, that's incredible. Look, there's so much. There's actually a lot to unpack here. First of all, this was one of those weird stories that becomes mainstream news, like, well beyond. I know when I start to hear from my family, like when my family's like, "What's up with this anthem singer?" in my text messages, that this is a story that resonates beyond our usual sphere of, like, hockey nerdery, right? And with Mark, first of all, I did a magazine, like, when magazines existed. I did a magazine feature that was on, like, setting the scene before a playoff game. So, like, it was like a conceit. I wrote like maybe it was a 600 word color piece where I, like, tracked his day and didn't have his name in the piece until I gave it to Al Murdoch. At the very last line of the piece is just the Al Murdoch intro line. So I wrote that for Sportsnet magazine back in 2015, and I, like, showed up at Kits High School where Mark was working with kids who were, like, in the musical, and he couldn't have been, like, a nicer guy. Like, he was completely easy to work with from a, journalist source sort of subject perspective. And yet, I knew, because I'd covered it 3 years earlier, that he'd sung at that anti-abortion rally, which had, like, graphic images, at the art gallery too, like, literally the same spot almost 8.5 years to the day later. We've known for a long time that Mark had some alternative political views and some political views that weren't going to be popular or play well in this marketplace. Like, we've known that, and the organization has known that, right? Like, there have been people in the organization in the past who've believed that this was only a matter of time. And currently with the organization, who sort of believed that this was only a matter of time. It came to an end, obviously, in a dramatic fashion this weekend, and with Francesco sort of laying the heat down. But, like, they knew. This isn't, do you get a ton of credit for acting quickly? Like, I definitely think you get credit for the PR side of it, because I thought that was masterful. But it doesn't change the fact that the organization had also, platformed and made Mark and his views prominent, despite his willingness to, participate for some of the causes that he believes in the exact same manner with which he participates in the Canucks in the past, right? Like, this is, so how much credit do you get for acting swiftly in response to the news this weekend? And how much do you, deserve to get side-eyed a little, to use a VanCast favorite term,
yes,
for allowing it to get to this point when this, PR liability was easy to foresee for much of the past decade.
Yeah, and look, I've racked my brain a little bit here, and I still don't know the full answer, but he had been phased out like, he wasn't the primary anthem singer, certainly last season. I think at some point he was just a Saturday night guy. Like, there have been lots of others. And so he had reached his peak as the anthem singer and certainly, you know, did it his way and all of that. But this isn't like this was the guy every single game. I think he was on his way out if he wasn't already out. For me, the other sort of funny fallout in all of this was the Mark Donnelly in England, the soccer writer who covers Sunderland. And, like, put yourself in this guy's shoes half a world away, knowing what we know about Canucks Twitter, right? Like,
yeah.
And this happened. It happened on a Friday night here, Friday at dinner time. So he probably awoke to this on Saturday morning with his mentions just full of, like, I can only imagine. I mean, we talked about the replies and the responses to Francesco's tweet. I can only imagine what this Mark Donnelly, the soccer writer in England, woke to on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I mean, if covering Sunderland isn't punishment enough, right? Like, he covers he shows up in London or whatever to cover the Sunderland's 1-0 defeat to Wigan Athletic in Football League One. I mean, his mentions must have been a sore, and that's hilarious, right? Like, so funny. Another funny coincidence, actually, is Mark Donnelly, the Sunderland writer, would have covered that game. And I believe an Australian fullback plays for Wigan Athletic who's named Massimo Luongo. So Mark Donnelly went to cover Luongo's game with Canucks Twitter in his mentions. And I appreciate that quite a bit. Anyway, look, the Mark Donnelly, hilarious. Like, just you know, that's a classic, like, butterfly flaps his wings on one end of the globe and, you know, causes a tidal wave in England. But look, the last part of this that I think is worth unpacking is just the, you know, is this, right? When we think about what the Canucks specifically have been through, right, to this point in the pandemic, and we think about what the draft looked like, right? With Todd Harvey and Jim Benning and John Weisbrod and their whole staff in masks and, you know, the bubble. Jacob Markstrom, you know, his reaction to the Lehner save on Brock Besser, for example, right? Like, just like holding his face while he's masked up. Jim Benning throughout those playoffs celebrating in his mask, right? Like, all of the protocols that went into executing this safely. The fact that the Canucks, you know, and the entire NHL were able to get through phase three and through the bubble with, you know, CDC recommended health guidelines that included masking, you know, even in this bubble scenario without a positive test, right? Like, they were able to compete safely in large part because they followed the science on health protocols, tested daily, contact tracing, like all of the epidemiological guidelines that will help us get through this winter were in place in the bubble and allowed the NHL and the Canucks to compete safely as they advanced to within 7 minutes of the conference final. Like, this organization that Donnelly represents is essentially, like, as public a testament as you can get to why all of these principles matter, like, to why this matters. And I think that's worth keeping in mind here. Like, on the one hand, you've got gobbledygook science, right? And ridiculously ill-timed appeals to freedom. And on the other, you've got proof pudding in the NHL operating safely during a pandemic of what we can do. Like, we can still do what we did before to some extent in a different way if we put in the effort and take the necessary precautions and allow ourselves to be guided by science. And unfortunately, we're at a point of, you know, high enough community rates of transmission across this country right now in Canada where that's not possible. And where we have to significantly prescribe what we do, even around the holidays. And it's because we haven't followed those guidelines. Like, we haven't been guided by the science. And that's just an important thing to keep in mind. Like, the Canucks and the NHL brand should serve to us as a reminder of what can be accomplished if we conduct ourselves safely and, you know, in alignment with what epidemiologists advise in containing the pandemic. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, especially as, you know, a mass controversy engulfs the team we cover.
Right. And I mean, it's cost Canuck employees, lots of them, their jobs.
No
and
kidding.
The team can't play because of this pandemic. And even when they do play, you know, they're not going to be able to put people in the seats and people won't be able to enjoy this sport that, you know, we all enjoy, all because of those things that you just mentioned. So, yeah, I mean, it's there in front of all of us. There's no doubt. And I'm with you. You know, we'll choose science. Freedom of speech, sure, but freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom from consequences. And I think that's sort of where we are at this point in time with this story. So shall we move on? Because I want to get to the piece that you and Harm collaborated on that's posted now at The Athletic. And, you know, it's the latest in this exercise of trying to peg expansion. And at some point, Seattle is going to have an expansion draft. And at some point, Seattle's going to join the National Hockey League. And, you know, the hope is that it's all still on track for next season. So we assume that the expansion draft will take place, you know, maybe not necessarily in the spring the way others have. It may get pushed a little to the summer months, whatever. Before Seattle hits the ice, they're going to have this expansion draft. And I thought it was interesting, and you guys point out in your piece that, you know, it's only been a handful of months since you did the last one of these, but, you know, when you think of free agency in October and guys that walked out the door for the Vancouver Canucks and Nate Schmidt comes in and Braden Holtby as well, like a fair bit has already changed in just that short period of time. And if you were to do another experiment in a couple of months, you know, it could change again. Like, this is such a living, breathing sort of organism, if you will, that, you know, until we know the Canucks roster, until we know the rosters of all these teams around the National Hockey League, and ultimately until they start playing and we know thresholds that are met, and you lay this out in the piece as well, because I think for a lot of people, Tom, like, expansion is, oh, who can my favorite team protect? But it goes beyond that, because all of these teams also have to meet thresholds as far as the players that they expose that will be available to the Seattle Kraken to select in the expansion draft.
Yeah, and straight up, if you don't meet the exposure requirements, like, you're losing a first-round pick, right? Like, nothing else to it. They will punish you hard. So there's a reason that in 2017 everyone was compliant. There's a reason they will be again, and it's because the costs are prohibitive, right? So you get to where the Canucks are at, and, like, the one thing that the compliance, like, the exposure requirement compliance piece leads you to pretty succinctly is it's pretty clear that Tyler Myers is going to be exposed in expansion. And I think that's a big talking point. Like, unless the club re-signs Jordy Benn or has, you know, multiple young defenders, like Olli Juolevi and Brogan Rafferty both hit the necessary games played threshold, which currently is set at 40, but that's assuming an 82-game season. I'm sure it'll be relaxed. But, you know, in a world where Rafferty or Juolevi play 20-plus games in the 2020-21 season, like, then they will have established themselves as NHLers who are also cost-controlled and cheap, and they will be valued more than Myers, right? Like, the underlying logic of what the exposure list tells us is that the Canucks are, you know, almost sure to expose a defender who, A, you know, played more minutes at 5-on-5 than just about anyone on the roster currently for the Canucks when they last season, and B, was their big free agent signing in the summer of 2019. Like, I think that's a massive takeaway, and that's sort of the main point we wanted to drive home was about, you know, Myers' deal and the logic of that and how it works. And of course, we sort of reemphasized that the lack of, you know, defender, like, we have Brogan Rafferty and Juolevi, guys who've played, what, three combined NHL games between them on the list. Like, clearly the Canucks have space in terms of a protected slot on the back end where they can potentially look to trade with a team that has, you know, protection issues on the back end, which most teams do, right? Like, the defense is meant to be crunchy, but because the Canucks have, you know, Triamkin, Hughes, and Rathbone all exempt, like, they're in a really unique spot, and that has to be used to their advantage. Like, has to be. We saw so many teams make this mistake the last time out. You know, it cost teams players like Shea Theodore, right? Like Jonathan Marchessault, like, top of the lineup caliber players. Like, this has to be a time for the Canucks to strike and significantly remold their blue line is over the next 7-8 months. And then up front, you know, again, if they don't re-sign Pearson, like if they don't bring in additional player volume, you know, they're going to have a protected slot that's used on a player like a McEwen, a Lind, or Tyler Motte, like a bottom of the roster piece. And that also seems a little bit wasteful. Like that also could be an opportunity. Like if you're not re-signing Pearson, or if you end up trading him as a rental at the deadline or something, like there has to be a way to bring in a forward who's going to be exposed. But there's all sorts of weird ramifications that this is going to have on the Canucks over the course of the season. And that's because it's based purely on the concept of player volume. And anything that's based on player volume means that every move you make is going to change the dynamic. From Seattle's perspective, this is going to hang over every single transaction the club makes between now and the expansion draft at the end of the 2020-21 league year.
I keep coming back to the fact that, and look, Braden Holtby, I suppose, is a candidate as well. That's why they signed him to the 2-year deal. That allows them to protect Thatcher Demko and expose Braden Holtby. And Holtby may be attractive. I mean, let's see what his season brings here. But just for the sake of this argument, like let's say it's Zach McEwen. Let's say that Tyler Motte is a guy that they decide they want to protect, that he continues to grow and develop as a penalty killer, and that McEwen is the odd guy out. And Zach McEwen is a player that the Seattle Kraken target on a team-friendly deal and all that kind of stuff. Like, if you step back and you think that the Vancouver Canucks come through 2 NHL expansion drafts in a 4-year span and lose Lucas Spezza and Zach McEwen.
Yeah, wild.
There isn't, there's not another team, like, you know, with all due respect to those two gentlemen who are National Hockey Leaguers and are living their dreams, there's not a team that comes through the expansion drafts better than the Vancouver Canucks, is there?
No, probably not. I mean, maybe Carolina, depending on who Carolina lost Connor Brickley the first time out, and Connor Brickley was a pending UFA. Like, Vegas signed him so as not to bog down their roster, right? And then he went UFA. Actually signed with the Florida Panthers. He's a great guy. So, you know, there's a few candidates to be among the teams that get through expansion the least scathed.
But the Canucks are in that. The Canucks are in that discussion.
I think the Canucks are clubhouse leaders. Like at this point, you'd almost think something weird would have to happen for them to lose someone significant, even if it is Braden Holtby, right? Like even if it is Holtby, considering where they were vis-a-vis their goaltenders and the expansion process 4 months ago, you'd still consider that to be like a win, right? And you know, I mean, there's no question here that that a team like there's no way, actually, as I look over this, there's no way that Carolina can escape this unscathed a second time. They've got too many good D. Right? So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So they're
so there you go. It's official. The Vancouver Canucks are the expansion cup champions.
Yep.
Put that banner to the roof now.
And I still can't believe Vegas didn't select Gaunce.
We're not going to go redraft the Vegas expansion.
No, the Canucks are well positioned, right? They were a pure rebuilding team with not enough quality NHLers the last time out. And this time out, they are, because of their young defense, because Quinn Hughes is exempt especially, right? They are so uniquely positioned. And that's an opportunity. Like, that's a massive, massive opportunity to function as a clearinghouse. There are complications, obviously, right? Like, it's going to be complicated, especially with Pettersson and Hughes expiring. The Canucks may be reluctant to add cap, but that's another sort of reason, like, to take advantage of this window, locking up Hughes and Pettersson potentially, having some certainty there might help. But whatever you do, like, this is a once in a lifetime or a once in a generation type opportunity for a hockey club with a young core like the Canucks have to fundamentally revamp their blue line. And, you know, it's one they have to take. Like, this is as high leverage as it gets. They have to figure it out. Exposing Tyler Myers, while it's a massive takeaway and a fascinating wrinkle, especially with how they sit, like, It's not actually that interesting because Myers is one of those good players who's still not going to be selected because of a high-risk contract, right? Like, there's no actual implications there, right? It's like when, you know, like, there's lots of players who fit that mold, and there's no drama. Like, there's just no drama about that player being selected. And that's, like, the Canucks need Tyler Myers. That's good for them. But that's another sort of reason why they have these extra protected slots. Like, you can't be using a protected slot on a 20, you know, he'll be 26-year-old player like Brogan Rafferty when other teams are risking losing really, really good, like 20-minute a night, 40-point defenders for nothing in this marketplace. Like, you just can't, looking over Carolina, you can't have Hayden Fleury and Jake Bean both be exposed when you're protecting Brogan Rafferty. Like, you have to be able to find an additional defender.
One of the points that you guys make, and I just want to flesh it out a little bit too, is Cole Lind and sort of his development, because this will be his third professional season, so he's going to have to be either protected or eligible to be exposed, right? Like, so, yes. You know, we talk about Zach MacEwen, and he's going to kind of fall right there on the fence. Like, if he has a really good season, I guess the Canucks might have to consider him over Mott. But, you know, the way you lay it out right now, I sort of agree with the seven forwards that you've got, and Tyler Mott is one of the protected ones. And again, the roster can change wildly here once the season gets up and running and GMs get a green light to start making some things happen. But so, for the sake of this argument, Mott is protected, MacEwen is available, and then a guy like Cole Lind. And, you know, I just wonder, like, Tyler Mott is what he is. I don't know how much more growth there is, but he is part of their penalty kill, as you say. MacEwen?
He's an elite penalty killer. Like, Tyler Mott is a dynamo, 4-on-5.
Okay, and that's important. And because we've talked about Adam Gaudette, like, integrating youth. Because, you know, you can't just continue to have Beagle and Erickson and Sutter as your penalty killer. You need some penalty killers, and Mott is at the top of that list. And so that's a skill set that works in his favor to be protected. So MacEwen, you know, again, I want to see it happen for Zach MacEwen. I think he's earned his chance, but I don't know how much better Zach MacEwen is going to get. I know that, you know, don't bet against him because he's kind of overcome everything at every level to this point. But Cole Lind was an early second round pick. Like, in terms of what he in theory could and should become, you know, is there not some more value there in a player, if we're talking potential, even though he has yet to step foot on NHL ice in a regular season game?
Yeah, there could be, right? And that's why this season's going to be so important for Lind. Like, I thought he was among the more impressive performers at the Phase 3 summer camp that we watched, J-Pat, especially considering that he wasn't even supposed to be there until the day before, right? When
surprise,
Sven Berchi,
you're coming to camp.
When Sven Berchi dropped out, right? So, look, Cole Lind, I think he'll have to show something, though, right? Like, in a player like Mott, you've got a guy who's elite in one phase of the game and who performed for you when the chips are down. We're down in the playoffs. He also brings this team speed. I think the Canucks will be loath to lose that type of a contributor in their bottom six. MacEwen's a quality, young, cost-controlled fourth-line player who may yet have some untapped third-line upside based on his scoring rates over the past couple of years. I don't think you want to lose that guy either. And then what happens if you re-sign Pearson or acquire an additional forward, right? Like, then you're certainly protecting a guy who plays big minutes for you, like, you know, 16 minutes a night over those bottom of the lineup pieces. So, you know, the thing with Lind is it's not just about earning a spot. It's not just about beating out Erickson, Roussel, Hauerluck. Like, it's also about beating out MacEwen, Mott, and Pearson if you're going to end up on that protected list. And, you know, this is what people don't understand. Like, but I get questions like this sometimes in the mailbag or whatever, where people are like, you know, will Lind be on the roster by 2023? And it's like, man, like, maybe, but it's not just about the organization giving him a shot. Like, you have to crawl over not just the guys ahead of you now, not just the overpriced veterans that the fans like to complain about, but also Hoglander, but also Podkolzin, right? Like, you have to do so much to cement yourself as an NHL regular. Lind hasn't done that yet. I think he's got some road to run yet. And, you know, now he might be in a position where, at least if it's going to happen in Vancouver, like, it might have to happen now, lest he be a pretty tempting piece for the Kraken's consideration.
Well, you and Harm do a nice job of laying it out there. I would suggest people, if they haven't already, check it out. You can go through the exercise yourself and try to figure out who should be protected and who should be exposed.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, if you're looking for alternate pod options throughout the week, and we're all sitting here waiting still for news to break about a return to play, I'm sure Jeff Blashill, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, is as eager as anybody. Jeff joins Craig Custance this week on the Full 60 at The Athletic. Wanted to mention, because I saw this over the weekend on Twitter, Max LaPierre calling it a career after 10 NHL seasons. I think he spent the last five over in Europe, played for Modo for a year, has been in Germany. But you think of Max LaPierre, Tom, and you have to think of a trade deadline acquisition in that 2011 run. Nobody knew it at the time that he was just keeping uniform 40 warm for things to come and Elias Pettersson. But LaPierre was he was a nice pickup, obviously, and a big part of that team. He fit in and was a nice part of the run to the Stanley Cup final in 2011.
Yeah, I mean, played top 9 minutes for them in those last two series, right? And played pretty well, scored that huge Game 5 goal. Almost had a signature moment in Canucks lore, right? But look, LaPierre, you know, this is a classic, like, hockey lifer. Like, you can't, for me anyway, I just can't not like everything about Max LaPierre as just a player and a person. Like, you know, drafted, second round. So he wasn't like a nothing prospect. But, I mean, he didn't make his NHL debut. He didn't really become an NHL regular till his, you know, age 23, 24 season in 08-09 for the Canadiens. And he's one of those guys who to stick around in the NHL, like he wasn't going to be a scorer and he probably wasn't going to be like a tough minutes third liner. So he became like a faceoff specialist and a super pest. And in the 11-12 season, and people don't remember this really, but, you know, he played all 82 games for the Canucks in that 11-12 season. They won the President's Trophy. He fought more than 10 times. He had 9 goals while playing exclusively on the fourth line. Like, that's tremendous value. And he extended his NHL career by becoming more willing to drop the gloves, by sort of breaking with the way that he'll be remembered in markets like Toronto, right? Or Boston, right? Where people will always remember him as this pest. Like, Max right. LaPierre didn't just start trouble. He, later in his career, came to the point where he actually pretty regularly finished it. You know, and you got to love a guy who leaves the NHL and keeps playing. Just, like, clearly loves the game. He's great to talk to. He's always been good to me. So, you know, congratulations to Max on a tremendous career. I think a lot of people will always remember that Game 5 goal and his contributions for that, you know, sort of late, or I guess that golden era of the Canucks. Like, those two consecutive President's Trophy winning teams, like, he was a big part of that group and went on to have a story. Like, he's got to be one of the last to retire at this point, right? Like, Cam Hughes is done now. It's like him, Edler, Tanev, right? Like, there's not a lot of guys that were still right. playing.
Yeah,
he was one of them. You know, as we approach what's going to be a 10-year anniversary, you know, for that Stanley Cup run this spring, you know, there's not a lot of them left. LaPierre was one of them. And, you know, I know he went back over to Berlin to play. I'd guess that his retirement, to some extent, like, I think he would have played another year if not for COVID-19 and everything that's sort of come about. So you can understand, you know, and I think that was true of Ham Hughes too, right? Like, a lot of these guys are sort of looking at their options and thinking, like, I don't know about this, right? Like, I don't know if I'm going to wait around sure. and put my family yeah. through this. Like, I need some certainty at this moment in my life and career. But congratulations to Max. He's, you know, 614 NHL games, 80 playoff games, like a pretty good career for not even just a pretty good career, a great career from a hockey lifer who clearly just loved the game.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, you know, 4.5 minutes into the third period of a scoreless game, game five of the Stanley Cup final, he scores. I mean, that, as it turned out, that was the last game winner the Canucks would score in that playoff year. And then you're right, 82 games the following year, 48 in the shortened season. So he was durable. He was there, available to them every night out. Traded to the Canucks by Anaheim with McGregor Sharp for Joel Perreault and a third rounder. And that third rounder, of course, turned out to be Freddie Anderson.
Freddie Anderson,
so
yeah.
The trade tree there. And it was funny, too. And I'm always curious about hockey circles. And so when I saw that Max Lapierre finished with the Berlin Polar Bears in the German League, I just clicked on the roster to see who else like he would have played with at the end of his career. And it's incredible how many connections there are on the Berlin Polar Bears roster. James Shepard attended Canucks training camp on a PTO a few years back. Pierre-Cedric Labrie spent a bunch of years with the Manitoba Blues.
Wow.
Never played for the Canucks. Landon Ferraro was at Canucks camp last year in Victoria.
Yep. Amazing.
And this is a bit of a stretch because it's not really the Canucks, but Justin Poggi was the goalie for Berlin. And, of course, he was the goalie on that 2006 World Junior Gold Medal team that won the title at Rogers Arena. So if you allow me to stretch that.
No, that's a legit Vancouver hockey connection for sure. For sure. I give you that. I don't even think that's a stretch. You're no risk of pulling your hammy there.
Okay.
You know what? The hockey people I've talked to too in discussing late career Maxim Lapierre say he was a lot of fun to watch in that last season that he had with the Polar Bears. Like they say that he played fun hockey, and that in the German league he was like an offensive centerman again, right? Like just and it, they
the fountain of youth.
the reports that I hear are Max Lapierre was an awful lot of fun to watch play, and that the Polar Bears as a team were pretty excellent. Oh hey, you missed. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the roster. You missed Mark Olvere from Burnaby, BC. Former Avs forward. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay, there you go. Yeah.
Mark Olver, excuse me. Yes, I completely gave him because I was thinking Lapierre, I gave Mark Olver.
You Olver, him.
I yes. gave him the French Canadian Mark Olver. anyway, he was a good depth player for those overachieving Avs teams in the mid part of the aughts or the teens, I guess. But yeah, no, so anyway, what I'd heard, Max Lapierre was a fun guy to watch play, and I think he'd become very interesting and very reflective late in his career. He's been great to talk to over the years, and congrats to him.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, I want to finish up with this because this is where we were 1 year ago. I tweeted out a video of it earlier in the day. It was on this day 1 year ago. JT Miller absolutely destroyed the water bottle behind Carter Hutton on the power play in overtime as the Canucks beat Buffalo 6-5 on a Sunday afternoon at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, Sunday day game. I remember it well. And that was Michael Ferland's first return attempt.
You're right.
That's what I remember.
No, you're right. He came back. He played that entire game. And then the next game was the Leafs. And he didn't make it out of early in the second period. And that was it for him until his attempt in Utica. So you're right, there is that storyline to it. It was also, and who can forget, Tyler Myers' first goal as a Canuck, galloping.
Oh, yeah, the shorty. The shorty.
Yes.
That was an amazing play, actually. Vintage Buffalo Tyler Myers.
Yeah, I mean, he starts at his own goal line, and with about six strides, he is into the clear, and JT Miller just kind of fed the puck into open ice, and Miller or Miller watched as Myers looked like a goal scorer, went in, and it took a while. I mean, a couple of months for him to get his first as a Canuck. But, yeah, it was just a memorable goal just because of the amount of ground that he covered. And look, when he's in open ice, the guy is an incredible skater. We've seen that an awful lot. I mean,
he's an awesome skater, man.
So, yeah, that was that was a year ago today. So there you go.
I remember that fondly, and I remember the Leafs game later that week fondly. Yeah, that was a good week of hockey. Like that was a lot of fun. I look forward to hearing a crowd celebrate the way that, you know, like especially those weekend day games, right, where you have more kids than usual. Like the sound of the crowd's a little different. Boy, do I miss that, J-Pat. True phantom pain. As I recall it now.
I hear you. I share it with you. And the Canucks were wearing their blacks that day as well. Just another added layer to all of that.
Right.
As well as one of the throwback days against their expansion cousins. Hey, check out our comments section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe the VanCast on Apple. Subscribe now and save. Go to theathletic.com/VanCast. You can receive two all-access subscriptions for just the price of one. Get unrivaled sports coverage for an unbeatable price. So go to theathletic.com/VanCast. Receive two all-access subscriptions for just the price of one. We certainly hope to see you there. All right, what do you...
Great Christmas gift.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. You're right. People are looking for ideas. If you're not already a VIP... Get on board. Get with the program.
Yeah, well, and who doesn't love shopping for themselves at Christmas, right? Like, that's the sneaky joy of Christmas is you go shopping for other people, and this year anyway, a lot of it's online, but you find stuff you like for yourself too. This allows you to have your cake and give the gift of the best sports coverage you can find, not just in Vancouver, but across sports in the English-speaking world. The Athletic, it's well worth your time. Check it out.
There you go. Make it happen. For Drancer and J-Pat, as always, thanks for your support, and thanks for listening to the VanCast here on The Athletic and theathletic.com.